And good evening. Already we're into February. Whoa. Yeah. 2014. So I bless the Lord. We're continuing in our studies in James 4. Again, I apologize for my post-surgical voice here. I'm hoping that my regular voice comes back, but if not, I shall use this one to bring forth the word of the Lord. So, but as we continue in James 14, James 4, I mean, it's a fascinating chapter, and it's one that tells us what to avoid, and that it encourages us in what to practice. So it all comes down to our free will and choices. But God tells us the things. It's right there in front of us if we care to understand. Don't practice these things, but go ahead and practice these things. But I don't want us to get caught up in what Christ's teachings are against something. I don't want to, Christianity is always presented as something against what you can't do. And I don't want to do that. I want us to concentrate on what Jesus said to do. We should be so busy doing the do's that we don't have time for the don'ts. And I don't like that presentation, but it comes across that way because the broken Adam nature is enmity to God. God already said your mind, how you think, how you feel, everything is already at odds with me. It is hatred. It is variance with me. So when I tell you to live a certain way, it's going to seem like it's negative because of the garbage that's coming out of you. But if you ask Jesus Christ to forgive you and come inside and have the Spirit of God dwell in you and you actually let it rule and start coming up more than you do, then you won't have that fight. Because it said the Spirit will never lead you to sin. You cannot sin. The Spirit of God cannot sin. So when it's ruling in you, it cannot do what you've always done. So it's like, okay, that is truly the answer, Lord. So it's not a matter of Christianity being a you-can't-do-anything religion. First of all, it's not a religion. It's a way of life. And it's just it's a powerful, powerful meditation that we have before the Lord as we go through the different scriptures. So what I want us to do is not to brush wrongdoing under the rug. Sin is sin. But God's going to deal with that. You concentrate on what God is for. And we're going to get into James 4, but I want to talk about Galatians 5, 22 and 23. This is what we need to concentrate on. He says, this is what you need to do. And he talks about the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. I guarantee if you have those things from God's Spirit in abundance, I don't care. Your marriage is going to change and improve. How you deal with your children, how you deal with your neighbor, how you deal with your boss or your workers or your co-worker. I don't care what you are doing. What you are thinking, feeling, or desiring. If you have love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, what you do, then it's going to turn out a lot better. But we often don't let God's Spirit rule. And he addresses that. But he's not saying, bad, naughty, sin, girl. He's not saying that to us. He's not saying, you're rotten and you're filthy and I hold my nose around you. He isn't. He's saying, I love you. I made you in my image. And the error of mankind has made the changes in you, not me. People are shaking their fists at God for dying babies and wars and all that. It's the end result of mankind's errors, not God. Well, God, why doesn't he stop all this? Because he gave us free will. But he is in charge, and he is good, and he is kind, and he's all of those things to the fullness. I thank God he's a God of self-control, or we'd all been gone a long time ago. That's it, I'm done. This experiment doesn't work. Well, first of all, it wasn't an experiment. It was a purposeful plan that he knew what he was doing in order to have people like us be with him for an eternity. This isn't heaven. It's the second kingdom. We are heading to the kingdom of God. But how we get through here is very important. You can have a little piece of God right here and have him rule in you. Now in James 4, in verse 1, he talks about he nails it for us. What is the source of your quarrels is the question that is asked. And you can follow along, James 4, starting with verse 1. What's the source of your quarrels? He says, the source of your quarrels are your pleasures that wage war in your members. Now, not just your sensual things that are going on and waging war. It's what you want, your way, your needs. Let there be light. Your comfort. The source of quarrels, you don't get what you want, how you think it should be. And we fight, and there are nations that fight all the time over boundaries. That's what we think we're supposed to have. We want your gold, and we want your oil, and all the rest of this gyration. What's the source of your quarrels? It isn't God. It's you going after your own comforts. And then he goes down and he addresses some of these things to us. And he goes, now why don't you receive what you ask? Now remember, he tells us he wants us to concentrate on Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But he has to go over these things for our good. Why don't you receive what you ask? And he gives us the answer. Because you ask with wrong motives. Now I'm not going to read the scripture out. I just wanted to clarify that to everyone. I'm just going to go through this. You can read the scriptures along with me. I'm just talking about what those scriptures are in verse 3. He says, you ask with wrong motives or to spend it on your own pleasures. Wow. Now, what could possibly be a wrong motive to ask? Oh God, I want a raise because I want to spend more money on myself. You know, what are we asking for? God is not saying, don't ask me anything. He's just telling us, go back and search yourself before me. Why are you asking me that? There are women out there, oh God, please give me a husband. As a pastor, I work on both sides of the fence here. The ones that are asking for a husband, but I work with as many people that are saying, oh God, please get rid of this guy. You know, so it's like, you don't even know what you're talking about. That's why God says, what are you asking for? What are your motives? Are you asking for a partner because you don't want to work or because you're lonely? He's saying, wait a minute, I can fill every one of your needs. Let me choose whether you're going to be single or married. Let me make that choice because I know what your gifts are and I know where I want to use you and whatever. Are you asking for money for what? Oh, I definitely want to win the lottery so I can give a whole bunch to the church, people say. Yeah, right. Well, the money you're throwing away in the lottery, why don't you put into the church? But anyways, that's another situation. But you don't receive what you ask for. God's saying, I want you to go back and look. People say, God didn't answer my prayer. And I go, yes, he did, but he said no. And sometimes it doesn't have to be a bad reason. You know, the Lord took me out of some of my previous careers in nursing and in the military, not because they were bad things. He didn't take me out of something that was bad. It's just that he had something else he wanted me to do. I just didn't know it at the time. He was leading me where he wanted me to be to do what I do today, and God knows whatever he's going to have me do in the future. But we have to be so careful. What are we asking for? And he just says, go back. The reason you don't get what you ask for is that very often it's you have the wrong motives and you just want to blow it on yourself. And then he goes on and he talks about a friendship with the world. And he says, don't have a friendship with the world because it doesn't match. Now, people get so confused in this. They really don't understand what this means. They go, I can't have any non-Christian friends. And there are actually some people that teach that. Don't talk to anyone who's not a Christian. I was raised up in the Catholic Church, and we were told we couldn't date a Protestant. I mean, that's what the rule was. If the person was a Protestant, you couldn't date him. I mean, they were really strict on the rules. You know, so they were talking about that. But God is not saying you can't have friends that don't know the Lord. I mean, what are we going to do? Put ourselves all in one building? And that's what some Christians do. They go to Christian church, and they go to Christian school, and they go to Christian shopping center, and they go to Christian movie. Nothing wrong with those things, but to isolate yourself from the world because you misunderstand what God says in verse 4, it's to throw it away. He talks about to not have friendship with the world because it's hostility with God. And what he's talking about, friendship with the world, is to do what the world does. That's all he's talking about. Don't be like the world. I, before I knew the Lord, said, I don't see anything wrong with it. I didn't see anything wrong with many of the things that I was doing. I couldn't see. I was blind, but I didn't realize it until God lit up my life. And then I saw the dirt and the filth for what it was. Now, that makes it a very delicate situation, because as many people I know still in the same filth that I was in, the same wrongdoing, the same sin. And you see, I'm not in it. So just the fact that I stopped doing some of the things that I used to heartily approve of and do when I was in the military back in my youth, etc., etc., I'm not coming against those that are still doing it, but it put an ought between us. When I stopped doing it, then I heard all sorts of things. Oh, goody two-shoes now. You're no fun anymore. Pugsley, what's wrong with you? I remember one time I said to them, you mean what's right with me? Mm-hmm. I finally wasn't doing the wrong, but I wasn't coming against them. There's nothing. Your life has nothing to do with anyone else in terms of making them make any changes. I'm not here to tell you to change. I'm here to tell you Jesus Christ is the only thing that can change. That is where our salvation is. You need to get right with him, and then he's going to work it out in your life, because your life is significantly different than mine. Has different details, different background, different parents, different things you've been exposed to, different hurts. You've been hurt in ways that I haven't been hurt. I've been hurt in ways you haven't been hurt. We are all wounded warriors here. And the old saying is so true. The Christian army is the only army that shoots its wounded. When someone sins, when someone falls, we're like, oh, boom, yeah, nasty, and you throw the bombs at them. No, it's not to give excuse to our sin. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the same love that comes from God needs to come from us. If he's in us, it will. God loved me long before I cleaned up. God loved me. There's a church, a little church down in Sarasota. Some friends of mine go there, and they said it's kind of a new church. They're just starting up. But the pastor said something that really struck them, and they said, you can belong here. He's talking about the church. You can come to the church. You can belong to the church long before you believe or behave. And I go, that's great. Yes, come in. Come into the church. Our doors are open no matter what you're in. But the point is, just because I love you, it doesn't mean that I'm endorsing your bad behavior. I will love you even through your bad behavior, just like God loved me through my bad behavior back then and any junk that comes up now. But I don't encourage bad behavior. I don't say, oh, it's okay, baby, you sinned again. No, it will separate you from God. Not from salvation, if you say, but it'll separate you from God and his blessings. It's sort of like going out in the cold and the rain. God's inside going, okay, stay out there as long as you want, but the heat's in here. You're still my kid, but the heat's in here. The food's in here. Go under the umbrella of God. So we give no okay to sin, but we don't point fingers at each other. I mean, homosexuals are certainly welcome to come into this church. Adulterers are welcome to come into this church. Drug addicts and alcoholics. But I'm telling you, I'm not going to sit here and say what you're doing is okay. I am going to tell you what God said about what life needs to be, what behavior is acceptable in his sight, and that's up to you and God. But if you're homosexual, you're going to come in and slathering and kissing all over, I'm going to have to address it and say that's not the appropriate behavior. If you're an alcoholic, you're going to come in here and spill your booze all over, it's not going to be an acceptable behavior. You see what I'm saying? An old drug addict's going to be sitting in the back row shooting up heroin. We're not going to sit here and say, oh, we love you with the love of God, so whatever you do is okay. We're tolerant. What a bunch of hooey. God is the most tolerant of all of us, but he doesn't say it's okay to do that. But he's not going to annihilate you if you do. But when you die and you haven't been restored to him and you aren't cleaned in the blood of Jesus Christ, and that's forgiveness, then you're not going to be with him for eternity. And that's all that we're telling you. There's behavior that meets God's measure and behavior that doesn't. There's no way your old nature can be trained to do the new nature stuff. You've got to have the God nature ruling you at the time. So it's not you even giving up your stinking sins. It's you dying to yourself and those ideas and feelings and desires over and over and over again as they come up. Practice, practice, practice. But as you crucify that flesh, if you belong to the Lord, you're not neutral in there. The only other thing that's going to come up is God's Spirit. So you got two masters inside, and if you deny the other and lock him up and don't let him rule, the only other one in you is what? Right there. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. So he's got it covered. And he said a friend of the world, in verse 4, a friend of the world is an enemy of God. But it doesn't mean you can't converse with those in the world or talk with them. You're just not going to heartily approve of what they do and be their friend to their behavior. But you're not going to just push yourself back. Now, I'm not going to go up to CJ's Tavern and, you know, go up there and have a beer with the boys. you know, I'm not going to do that. But if God should tell me to go in and tell him something and preach in there, I will. But I'm not going to go in there and just do that. I'm not going to have some, I can just see the headlines now. Pastor Linda falls out of CJ's, you know. No, I'm not going to be a bad example before God. I am going to look at what is my outward appearance. What are my outward activities? What is my outward behavior? What are my outward facial expressions and emotions and all of that? I keep that in check, not because I'm some goody two shoes, but because I don't like stuff that offends God. I love God more than I love me now. And he has brought it to that point. I don't want to offend him. That wrong behavior is an offense to my love. And we need to have that perspective, but only God can give that perspective to you. And so what does God want to dwell in us? This foolishness we were born with? No, he wants his spirit to dwell in us. And look in verse 6. He talks about God being opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. You know, I know some people, I know a young man right now that just spent a number of years in jail, and I tell you, it was a humbling experience. He's totally changed in attitude and whatever, and not just a, you know, I'm going to be good because, you know, I don't want to go back to jail type thing. God used that experience to totally turn him upside down and get some of the stinking pride out of his life. God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And I can remember when I was teaching nursing up at the college up there in Newport Richey. I remember this day like I just was yesterday. I was in my lab coat. I had just come back from making assignments from the student nurses over at the local hospital. I was going back to my office where I had a secretary. I had a lot of people helping me as a staff, you know. So I'm walking across the campus. I've got my briefcase in one hand, lab coat on, and I'm walking, and people are just saying, "Hey, hello, hey, Miss Bugsley, hey, Miss Bugsley," whatever, you know. And I remember saying, as I walked past the open, it was like a little fountain area, I said, "God, I love this job. I love it. I'm making money. I'm getting tenure, and I'm going to get my doctorate in nursing. Ah, yes. I can smell my office at USF. Oh, I know the plan you have for me. Oh, yeah. Oh, brother." In that moment when I said, "I love this job," something hit me right in here, because I was very good at what I did. God showed me, hit me right there. I was proud. Now, God doesn't mind you being confident with the gifts he's given you. Not at all. But there's a difference. You see, the original gift that God gave to Adam was confidence. After the fall, after sin, it became pride. You know, it was love that God gave Adam and Eve. After that, it was lust. Oh, my. It was steadfastness God gave Adam and Eve. And after the fall, it became stubborn. God told me years ago, "I'm changing your stubborn into steadfast." I would venture to say he's done that. He's done a lot of things. When God took me out of nursing, it was the most embarrassing situation ever. There weren't any jobs. I put out resumes all over the place, and I finally said to the guy, I said, "What, you froze every job in Hillsborough County to prove a point? What the heck is going on? He already took me out of the military, now he took me out of nursing. What was going on?" I knew someone who worked over at University Square Mall, the head of maintenance. And he was a good Christian man. I said, "Well, Lord, I need to pay my rent." And he's a Christian. And he asked me if I'd like to work for him because he knew I needed a job. I said, "Okay, 5 in the morning, 0500 to 1000, 5 o'clock till 10 o'clock in the morning, I was there at the mall cleaning it." Mm-hmm. Running the little buffer on the floors, vacuuming, because we had carpets over there, cleaning out the trash, and taking the little pooper scooper to get the cigarette butts out of the little sand cans. And I'm there. I'd only been doing about a week or two. I go, "God, this is ridiculous. You know, I got a master's degree," but crying out loud, I'm cleaning out cigarette butts. One of my former students had come early, around 8:30, going to the coffee shop. I'm standing here like this. He's coming down. There's no way for me to escape. I could have gone, and run the other way, but I was so frightened. I was so frozen. I went, And he comes up to me, and he sees me, and he goes, and he looks at me just like that, head to toe, because I'm in an old work shirt and the navy blue work pants, you know, the Dickie work pants. And I'm shoveling out stuff. I was just his prof up at the college, and now he goes, "Oh, Miss Lander, how's it going?" I said, "Jimmy, it's going real well. So all I said, I thought, oh, great, all of Newport Richie is going to know. The reason I got out of nursing is I'm an idiot or something. God knows what they thought. But right then in that minute, I said, God, I know what you're doing. You're humbling me.
Amen.
Whoa, does he know how to put it in humble? And I remember another instance. I was screaming and yelling at Mark because I was working for him 6 years. And we were in his trailer, one of the other trailers that he had. And I said, Mark, I am so sick. I wasn't yelling at him, and he knew that. Thank God he's the pastor that we have, because he just stood there and never said a word to me. And I was screaming, I said, I am so sick of smelling like a guy. I am so sick of working like a man. I am so sick of being out. I'm sick of running into this trailer, closing the door just to change my pad. I'm sick of it. And he was willing to pray with me. You don't ever come against a woman on the rag anyways, but I was just expressing that, and God was humbling me in all those experiences. And I remember another time when I was standing at the counter of a 7-Eleven, because we would stop and get a little soda or a little chip or something like that for a little snack. And I'm standing there, and you know you stink when you smell yourself. I mean, you smell. By 8 o'clock in the morning, you are soaking wet when you work out in the fields. God, why am I doing this? And I'm standing there, and a guy comes up right beside me. You know how you come up and stand beside? He came up and stood beside me, and he just went, whoa, and backed right off. And I just said, I'm still being humbled, Lord. Then I finally started working a few days in the office, started doing some office management, 2 days in the office, 3 days out in the field. Finally, one day I went to the office. I put my hand on the doorknob, and I said, you know, God, if this is where you want me to serve, I'm in. Opened the door and went in. 2 weeks later, Frank, who was the former pastor, he said, God has shown us to open a school, and you are going to be the lead teacher. I said, well, son of a gun, isn't that wonderful? Came here to be the lead teacher, took an $8,000 annual cut. That's okay, too. Now we're down even lower. It's just like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. What a wonderful God we serve. I'm telling you. Don't think when you give your life to Jesus Christ, there's going to get money and fame and all this stuff. The more proud you are, the more junk you got in, and the further down he's going to have to bring you, not because he's punishing you, but because he loves you. Honey, I got to get this stuff out. If you got more black tar in you, I'm going to have to take some real tough chemicals and some real tough of those Brillo pads to scrub it out. I know you're dying, but as a nurse, I saw that. We had to debride the burn patients, and it was terrible, and it hurt them, and they had pain, and we had to give them morphine. We had to hurt them to make them better. God talks to me a lot in the medical field like that, and I go, you know, that's really true, Lord. That's really true. You know, I remember after my surgery, and I'm throwing up terribly, but it was good. I got that junk out of my system. You know, you go through some of these things and it cleans you out. It's terrible at the time. It hurts at the time. So a lot of people give up on God. They give their heart to God. Their life falls apart and they go, what kind of a God is this? One that loves you. One that knows that you built your life with balsa wood and termite infested wood, and it's falling in on you day after day over and over again. And he has to rip out that wood. He has to rip out that junk that you put in there. And he's putting in what he's putting in, what he's put in me, what he'll put in you is strong. Strong, sturdy oak from like the Black Forest, the finest marble, sturdy foundational things that are going to last a lifetime spiritually. It's worth it. So when God talks to us in James 4 and he says about in verse 7 to submit to God, resist the devil. If you resist the devil, he'll flee from you. We don't do that. Oh, I thought about this and I thought about that, and then you end up doing the stupid thing. Fight it. This is a battle. Fight it. Draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, he says. You do this. There's no excuses. Stop coming to his table with dirty hands. Your mama told you at least that much. Go wash your hands. She didn't throw you away as a child. Just go wash your hands. That's all. When you come to the Lord, you got to be clean. You can't get into heaven unless you're clean. That kid with dirty hands can do all the good works they want, but they're dirty. Nothing unclean can be in the presence of God. Purify your hearts, he says in verse 8. And he goes, God says, you're going to be in verse, I got to read you verse 9 because I don't want you to miss. It said, he talks about in chapter 4. He says, he talked about drawing near to God. He says, purify your hearts, you double-minded. Verse 9, be miserable and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy into gloom. What the heck? Why is he saying that? He's talking about humbling. You see, I had a lot of my joy turned to gloom. I had a lot of my laughter turned to mourning during that period. It hurt. I didn't like it. I didn't have position anymore. I didn't have recognition. I didn't have dignity. I'm cleaning the mall. 5 o'clock in the morning. I said, you know, God, what is going on? Well, that was part of the mourning. That was part of the turning the laughter around for what it was. But he's not doing that to you to do that. He says to humble yourself in God's presence. Absolutely. He says, and God says not to speak against your brother. You don't want to be judging your brother. And he says, then he goes on in verse 14, he talks about you being a vapor. You're just a vapor. We talk about this all the time, and I'm going to finish up with this. So, so powerful. I am an older woman now. I don't feel it. I'm still 25 inside my body, but every morning I get up, my body goes, you just only think you're going to do this. You know, what piece fell off during the night? I don't know. I find another one in the bed. Oh, my ankle. Oh, my knee. But God is good. I bless God for good health, overall good health, really. But I am an older woman. I'm old enough to be your mother. But in that, if I live to be 150, it's like that. Mm-hmm. It's not even a blink in terms of comparing it to eternity. So really, you're suffering, even if you had 45 years of pain in a wheelchair. People say, well, how come God didn't stop that? You see, because God is timeless. To him, it's not like a whole long time. It's only to you. And God knows that if the end result is going to be to save you and 52 other people, he's willing to let that dwell on you. Whoa. He was willing to change all of my life and do all of that stuff because he knew what he wanted to do. You see, if you trust God, you're going to say, even when bad things are happening. Now, like I said, just make sure you don't bring the bad things on yourself. You know, you go getting drunk and hit a tree and wreck a car or kill a person, you're going to be in jail. Yeah, you did something that brought that on yourself. I'm not talking about that. But some things are going to be happening to you. And he's telling your life's but a vapor. That means it's short. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to be miserable? I mean, bad things happen to a lot of good people. Their babies die, they get cancer, and they still love God, and they still prayed, but God is doing something. He didn't leave them, he didn't abandon them, he's not mean, even though people say he is. They shake their fist at the very God that loves them. You don't get some free ride just because you come to know him. And some Christians do that. They turn up their nose. Oh, please. You don't smell good. Oh, you use bad language around me. Well, who are you? You're not holy. The Spirit of God within you is holy. There's nothing holy about any one of us. I always tell you, your best day with me is when I'm not me. Because then you're going to get opinion. You're going to get what's happened to me in the past. You're going to get how I think. Or maybe some of my ideas. Or maybe some of my emotions come out. I stifle that. I have to practice that. And every once in a while, I'll squeak out. Some of you know that. You've been around me long enough. It might not be the best thing I ever said or did. But that's not what my life is. That's a once in a while thing that comes up. And God forgives me. If I am impatient or if I'm angry or have an unwise response. But what's your life? This is so short if we could just understand that. It's not 50 years of misery. What have I done with it? I mean, time has gone by so quickly. I mean, I remember times when I was 5. I remember 15. I remember 30. I remember 40. I remember 50. God have mercy. I remember 60. I'm coming up close to 70. I thank God I'm still moving everything. But it's short. What have you done? What is your legacy? When you're in the box and people are standing around, are they going to say, thank God this one's gone? Or are they going to weep and mourn because they loved how you loved the Lord and they loved how the fellowship and they loved what was going on and they enjoyed what was there? Oh my gosh. I'm not saying to do something to have a nice funeral. I'm not saying that. I'm just talking about the brevity of life. And in verse 16, if you know what to do, and don't do it. God says it's sin. I'm not giving you, excuse me, a list of do's and don'ts. I'm not. I don't judge you. I'm not giving you my list of what I think you should do. I'm just telling you what God says. And when you look at it, none of his directions are really rules, although they call them that. They're really wisdom. When you look at that, there is no wisdom in a 14-year-old fathering a child. Hello. There is no wisdom in shooting up heroin. There's no wisdom in drunkenness. There's no wisdom in lying, cheating, bribery, corruption. There's no wisdom in adultery, throwing your family under the bus. There's no wisdom in stealing. There's no wisdom. Oh, you get immediate pleasure, or you get immediate power, or something like that. But there is no wisdom in it, because it is not going to lead to something good. It might lead to something rich, but it's not going to lead to something good. And it doesn't mean that all the rich are bad. Like I tell the kids when I speak in high schools, I hope you all get to... Being rich isn't bad. Capitalism isn't bad. That's just a system of production. I said, I hope you all get to be billionaires. But when you're a billionaire, you build a daycare center at your shop. You pay your workers $50 an hour. You give them a good medical and dental program. You see what I'm saying? You share the profits back. You help the people in the community. I mean, this government garbage, it's nothing but one bureaucracy after the other. You know, like the breakfast program. It's a nice idea. But then you got to hire an engineer and a construction people and build the kitchen and get the staff and pay their pensions and pay their salary and pay their medical and their dental. And you got to get the secretaries and do the checks. And then you got to do all this stuff and the copy machines. It's like $5 trillion before the first kid gets a banana. This is ridiculous. We can help each other. But we've stopped doing it God's way. That's why we have the travail. 1960s, 12% poverty level. 2014, trillions of dollars poured into it. The poverty level is what? Now, if it was only 2%, I'd go, it worked. It's 12.5%. It went up. God have mercy on us. What foolishness. God gives us the directions, people. God gives us the directions. If you know what to do and you don't do it, God says that's sin. Well, what about those who don't know? God does have mercy on them, but their sin is still on them. If they don't come out from underneath it, they can't be in his presence. Not here or there. So it's not just saying, oh, I just won't do it. People just come to church and they block their ears. I don't want to hear it because I read, if you know to do and you don't do it, it's sin. So I just won't listen to anybody anymore and just keep, no, you're still accountable. Because see, God is the one that's speaking. The conviction is in the heart. And if you don't take it, that's where God comes in and says that. So those of you who have a handout, there's a couple of questions on there, you know, what's the easiest part of the chapter to understand, et cetera, et cetera. So you may want to go over that. Next week, we will go over chapter 5 of James, but we'll finish up here now. So just understand what God is saying. It's not so much the don't, but he does have to tell you what is the problem in your life. But stay with the do's, which is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. God bless you.